Howdy folks, some midnight sun greetings from Scandinavia. I hope you're having a nice day. This is Henrik and you're listening to Red Ice Radio, redicecreations.com. Today we're talking with Larkin Rose. He's known for debunking the most dangerous superstition, government. He's a voluntarist, anarchist, and a tax protester, as well as an author of several books. Larkin promotes the concept of self-ownership and a voluntary society, writing articles, giving talks, and making videos available at larkinrose.com. Today we're going to talk about government violence and human violence, what the rule of the jungle really means, and how the most violent and immoral people ascend to politics and positions of power. We'll begin, however, to talk about the movie The Purge, a propaganda hit piece on anarchism about the unrealistic fantasy of what would happen in society for one day there were no laws. And welcome back, Larkin. Great to talk to you again. We thoroughly enjoyed our program with you in September last year, so thank you for coming back once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Now, we have a lot of things to discuss today, as we did last time. I kind of want to, you know, deepen our discussion a little bit, kind of bridging on from what we discussed last time, and people can, of course, go back into the archive and listen to that for a really good interview. I also wanted to also actually cut like a 15-minute version of our discussion. It was, you know, awesome stuff, getting my questions out of the way there, you know. and you have some really good stuff, Larkin, so I'm looking forward to this. But I thought we could begin with a great video that you did recently, kind of a review, if you will, of the film called The Purge. I don't know if it's out yet. Some people might have seen it if it is. But basically, to just give a brief overview here, it's basically a movie about having one day of the year where there is no laws, basically. And as I saw, you know, the trailer, I looked at it after I saw your video on this. And as I saw it, it's basically about letting out steam, I guess, because as they suggest in the film, if you're allowed to break the law, let's say one day of the year, then everyone would be more peaceful, I guess, and happier the rest of the time. Because as they imply, then mankind, you know, is a violent being, and the only way to deal with this is either to, as they suggest in the film, to kind of let the steam out, if you will, or we need to be chemically lobotomized, if you will. That's another discussion altogether. But in any regard, what it means is that we would be disconnected from our true nature, because according to the ideas of how we should be as human beings, this will then never work, as we are overtly violent beings. This is what the movie suggests, kind of. But what do you think would happen? Describe this a little bit to us, Larkin, if we actually had one day of the year where there were no laws. What would happen?
Well, that's, I should quick point out that I made the video in response just to the trailer. I haven't even seen the movie. It's out now, and I have no desire whatsoever to see it. But just, I was instantly struck by that, you know, the line of, for one day, all crime is legal. And it shows just a giant misunderstanding of not only human nature, but just cause and effect and what influences people and what doesn't. And so I did a little spoof thing making fun of it. I actually did two videos. One I put together at Porkfest, which is like 1,500 people who pretty much don't believe in government hanging around together and getting along just fine. It's like a real world example of what actually happens when all crime is legal. And it's so strange to watch people believe lies that they're told about themselves, because basically and I think this was just intentional propaganda. Maybe it was just that the director was sort of a state worshiper who didn't really think about things, but it sure looked like propaganda to me, because the message is basically to all you people out there, you're stupid, violent, wild animals, and if for one day politicians weren't telling you what you're not allowed to do, there would be mayhem and violence and death and destruction. And it really is a bizarre thing to allege that, you know, that what is keeping us in line is that some politicians are writing words on paper over in Washington. And if not for that, it would just be chaos and mayhem.
Right. Yep.
And it's so weird to watch people believe that. And if you break it down to specifics, almost everybody can see through the lie. Like, people have these instinctive concerns like, well, if there wasn't law, people could do whatever they want. And my first follow-up question is, well, if somebody attacked you and you had the means to defend yourself, but there wasn't a law, would you just say, well, darn, there's not a law, so I'm going to let you attack me? Or would you still defend yourself?
Right, yeah. Well,
and if you would defend yourself, then there's still a deterrent to people attacking you. You know, even the even those people who actually would attack you if they thought they could get away with it, which I think is a pretty dang small minority of the population.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah. And but so much is about the mentality, because when people, you know, people on their own generally don't attack each other. I mean, there are plenty of people who, for lots of psychological reasons that probably aren't worth getting into in detail here, actually are like malicious or vicious and believe violence is the way to handle things. And I think that's especially true of a lot of places in the United States. But the idea that that is somehow kept in check by politicians telling them to be nice is just weird. And it's an idea that I used to assume that, well, government keeps people in line. And the truth of the matter is that there is such thing as a deterrent factor, that if somebody is going to attack you, but he's afraid he might get shot if he does, then he might not attack you.
That's
just
right.
Because, not because he's suddenly good, but because he doesn't want to get shot. But for people to think that a politician scribble, usually known as law, that's the difference. Like, if somebody's going to attack you and he thinks that cop might shoot me or my victim might shoot me, the attacker doesn't care which it is. He doesn't say, well, I don't mind being shot as long as there's not a law behind it. He doesn't care why somebody's shooting at him. He only cares about his own safety and comfort and avoiding pain. So the idea that people could get away with anything if we didn't have politicians telling us what to do, it implies that nobody, first of all, that nobody would defend themselves if politicians weren't telling us what's right and wrong. Like, we'd have no idea how to behave morally,
right,
if not for legislation.
Yeah.
And that if people are being attacked, nobody would defend themselves if there wasn't a law saying you're not allowed to attack people. And both are just patently ridiculous. And if people think about them, almost everybody says, well, yeah, I guess there would still be deterrent, and most people don't want to be violent monsters. But there's sort of this trained-in idea that a bunch of parasites in Washington, or, you know, the capital of your country or state or wherever you are, that they're the reason we're civilized, which is just ridiculous.
Yep.
But people believe it.
Yeah, it's true. And so this is obviously a good portrayal, this movie, of how they think that things would either go, or it's just flat out, obviously, propaganda that they know that it wouldn't be like this, but this is how they want to portray it. But if we for a moment kind of analyze that idea of, like, okay, we had one day of no laws and then we could move on, what would happen, just to see how this would, I think, at least subside if we had, let's say, 1 week without laws, 1 month without laws, and then maybe 1 year, and then finally no laws at all. We get to that. But I think as well, on top of that, though, that in the beginning, there would be people who would act out their suppressed violence, things that they, you know, just as you described, just because it's written on a paper, then they associate that with their morals, unfortunately. But now they have things that have been suppressed, or you know, hidden things that they really would want to have done or something like that. I don't know. I think it's just personally a reflection of how those people would act and kind of what goes on in their head, if you will. But do you think, though, that there would be a lot of people that would act out this suppressed violence, if you will?
I actually don't think it would be that many. And there's two main factors here. The first is just the moral factor, the conscience. Like, how many people, if they were told the police won't stop you, are suddenly going to think that assault and murder and things like that are okay?
Yeah, right.
I don't think it's very many people. Now, I think there are a number of people, I won't even try to guess a percentage, who kind of don't have a moral code, and the only thing keeping them from being violent is the fear of what other people will do to them. I think some of them, given this situation of, like, no government for a day, might, for a very short period of time, mistakenly assume that that means they can go do whatever they want and get away with it. But I think, you know, as soon as they pick the wrong victim and he happens to be armed, they'd figure out, oh, yeah, it doesn't really matter if there's a law or not. People still don't want me to attack them. And so I think there may be a given the situation, there may be a number of people silly enough to think that it would actually mean that they can get away with anything they want. And to be blunt, I think most of those people would be dead by the end of the day because they would start attacking people and people would defend themselves. And then they'd learn the hard way that the deterrent effect does not rely on legislation.
That's right.
It relies on people's ability and willingness to exercise the right of self-defense. But I even think most criminals who generally aren't that intelligent, they would already know that this isn't going to make any difference. Like there was a poll in this country of like violent felons, and most of them said we're already way more scared of average armed citizens than we are of the police. If the police catch us, we get free room and board. If we attack an armed citizen, we get death.
Yeah.
As a general rule. So they already understand the deterrent game, and I don't even think very many of them would be under the misapprehension that politicians looking the other way would mean they could get away with whatever they wanted.
And as we know, I mean, despite there being law, that the criminal that we're supposedly to be protected from with these laws still break them by
right.
robbing, raping, murdering, etc. So this is obviously kind of a false logic, of course, but If we move on there, Larkin, then let's say we had 1 week without laws, 1 month, 1 year, etc., eventually no laws, would there be kind of a natural kind of order, if you will, that actually would arise from that we would learn to live and deal with that? Because obviously, I mean, I just go back to that point again of suddenly enforcing or not enforcing that, actually releasing the rules suddenly would have a potential effect, but after some time this would subside and we would kind of learn to live with it, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the belief in authority is a giant mental crutch for people. It sort of removes their responsibility, and they think making society work and protecting them is somebody else's job, the big government that you pray to. And I think if you yank that crutch away, and there we have examples of this, there's a disaster that's so big and immediate that the road system falls apart and there's no cops to be seen. And people, when they realize, wow, it's just sort of us against the world, a lot of people do a really good job of getting together and cooperating and helping each other. And because they suddenly think of themselves as adults, basically.
Yeah.
They suddenly realize, well, we're just people and here we are on this planet and it'll probably be more pleasant if we're not attacking each other and if we like cooperate and figure out how to defend ourselves. And so I think given a day or a week, a lot of people, even people who haven't even thought about politics or philosophy or anything, if there's some neighborhood somewhere and they get told, by the way, you don't have any more police for a week, I suspect that a few of them would at least have the presence of mind to say, well, let's sort of at least form a network of people like who here is armed and are we able to defend ourselves? And do we know if there's even a threat of somebody coming? And is there a way that we can call each other if somebody's coming? And like, if suddenly it's up to you, then you figure out a way to deal with it. And I actually think within a week, probably what disorganized people who had never thought about it before, what they would come up with is way better than what 100,000 years of government has come up with. Just because hardly anybody, given that situation, is going to say, I should be king, I'm allowed to rob everybody. And more importantly, all the people around him, if he was insane enough to say that, they wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't say, yeah, you can rob us. And without the victims believing it, the authority doesn't happen and government doesn't happen. So it would just be a bunch of people saying, we have the right to defend ourselves, so we might want to organize a little bit or figure out what we're doing. I really think when you yank away the crutch of authority, people can very quickly become fairly responsible, rational human beings. But as long as the crutch is there, they're being trained to be basically irresponsible and stupid, yeah, as if the world isn't their business. But when you make it their business, I think people do a pretty darn good job of adapting.
Well, you're right. They need to step up to the plate, and otherwise, this is something that they just kind of, you know, hand over to someone else. You know, as you imply, they take no responsibility. But you know, I've mentioned this before, but just, you know, George Bush, Daddy Bush, talking in his speech about the rule of law as opposed to the rule of the jungle. This is actually when he has one of his, you know, New World Order speeches or whatever. But I think that this is what, you know, he and those like him, you know, the parasites, if you will, that have been living off of other people and their hard work, that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of the rule of the jungle, the natural law, if you will, because I think that these people would actually be the ones who were, you know, kind of just like you alluded to, Larkin, they would be the first ones to kind of, people would go after them because they realize that these guys have not, they don't live in accordance to, you know, how good people should live. And this would have been found out pretty early in the process. And therefore they've been, you know, taken out, if you will. And that, you know, being good or bad or whatever people think about it, there are people who would, I think, go after them for the reasons that they cannot, you know, live properly, if you will, or at least it would have been, you know, frozen out or thrown out of the, you know, the tribe or the town or whatever you want to, you know, define that. But bottom line is, I think that they are aware that they're protected behind the rule of law, just like, you know, George Bush is talking about. So if they would let this go, people would basically take him out. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, like, this movie very may well be the elitist projecting their own terror, because the people in power who've been robbing and controlling and threatening and spying on millions and millions of people for years and years and stealing huge chunks of everything they earn, they're the ones who have something to fear if suddenly there is no state enforcement mechanism for a day or a week, because there's 100 million victims in this country of the federal extortion racket who would have pretty good reason to go start burning down IRS offices and things like that,
right, yeah,
with people in them or not. And again, whether that's moral or not, whether it's okay, is a different thing from what would probably happen. And I think what would probably happen is people would suddenly feel empowered to resist the people who have been victimizing them for years and years and years and years. And that's mostly people in government. And so I think this is sort of the elites worrying that, you know, the rabble might seek revenge against the parasite class if there wasn't this big army of state mercenaries. And the whole notion of rule of law instead of rule by the jungle. I'm actually in the process of making a slightly flippant video called The Rules to respond to this very issue, the idea of people say, well, there have to be rules,
right?
Like, and they mean there has to be a centralized authoritarian rule maker that tells us all how to behave. So I do a silly little spoof on that and make up some really stupid rules and then say, and if you thought you were, you know, if you think the rules should be something else, well, who cares? You're one of the rabble. You're the problem. You're the one that there have to be rules to control. So obviously we're not going to ask you what the rules should be. But people have this weird paradox in their heads of on the one hand, they know that the rules should be don't attack people and don't rob them and this and that and the other thing. But for some reason, instead of just having people understand that and behave accordingly, they want some all-powerful, undefeatable, authoritarian thing to proclaim those rules. Trouble is, as soon as you appoint an all-powerful rulemaker, the first rule he makes is always, I'm allowed to rob you. Every time, every government in the history of the world, the first thing they do is proclaim that they have the right to tax, which means steal money from people. So to build this giant authoritarian ruling class in the hopes that it will enforce good rules is ridiculous. It's literally never happened in the history of the world, because as soon as you put someone on a pedestal, on a throne, and say, you are our rightful lord and master, if he believes it, why wouldn't he say, good, then I get to take your money? I mean, if somebody convinced me that I really had the right to rule them, that's the first thing I would do is take everybody's money and be rich. But luckily, nobody can convince me of that.
Well, I mean, in your book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, you talk about this too, and the extension of this, that basically the issue, the problem that we're dealing with is basically good people following the rules of others, people in government, that basically has set up, a rule system, a law system that now actually enforces this violence and murder and actually bloodshed in the extension. Tell us a little bit more about that, Larkin. Describe that to us, how that process kind of goes.
Yeah, the main problem with the belief in authority is not that the guy at the top believes in it. It's that all the good people believe in it, and by believing it, they allow themselves to end up as basically fuel for evil. And there's, as the Most Dangerous Superstition points out, you know, you look at Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia or, you know, any of the famous tyrannies in history, and you think, well, how did they manage to build these giant militaries? Because the government doesn't create any wealth. The Third Reich was built by the hardworking, decent people of Germany who actually imagined a moral obligation to hand over money to the ruling class.
Yeah.
And the giant monstrosity that was the Soviet Union was built with the money of hardworking people who actually believed in a moral obligation to hand over the fruits of their labor to a bunch of violent parasites.
And they took it, obviously. People were murdered, they were killed, those who refused to give it up to the state, the people who just arrived at the door and said, give this to us, and they said no, they got shot.
Yeah, and they got shot because the ones doing the shooting believed in the authority.
Right.
And so the Most Dangerous Superstition goes through the different categories of people, the lawmakers, the law enforcers, the victims of it, the spectators, and shows how the belief that that's legitimate, the belief that there can be legitimate government, completely warps society. And it can take a society of like 99% decent people and turn it into a horribly violent tyranny, because the decent people are proud of being law-abiding taxpayers. I do as I'm told and I pay my fair share of taxes, which means I obey the politicians and I give them tons of money. And the fact that good people would take pride in obeying and enriching some of the most evil people in the world, that's why we have mass evil going on. It isn't because 99% of the people are evil. It's just because they believe this lie that it's good to obey commands if they're called laws. You know, never mind what the command is, just if it's legislation, then it's law, because, and it's a crime to break the law, and it's you're noble and great if you're a law-abiding taxpayer. And that mentality really has been the root of the vast majority of evil in human history. Because, you know, if there's one psycho at the top who says, I am your lord and master, I want to rule the world, that doesn't matter if everybody underneath him says, you're not above us, you're not our lord and master, you're just some psycho, please go away. They only get the power if the people imagine that they have the power.
Yep.
It's all illusion. And if the people don't believe in the authority, literally there is no authority, because authority is in the eye of the beholder. If somebody comes up to your house and says, I am your king, it's like Monty Python skit.
Yeah.
And you say, no, you're not. If everybody says, no, you're not, literally he isn't. But if everybody imagines that he really is, then he suddenly has power because of their misunderstanding of reality. Simply hallucinating something that isn't really is the only reason tyranny ever happens, because the normal people hallucinate legitimacy to a ruling class where there is none. And it gets its power from that hallucination. And so everything I do is trying to remove that hallucination, so people stop imagining that narcissistic sociopaths actually have the right to boss us around and take our money.
Well, I mean, reality of the world, if you will, not that it's like that, but currently it's like that because, just as you alluded, we are living in this illusion. So right now the world is created in the minds of other human beings, the collective then, actually, if you will, because, as you say, if they allow it, then it's going to happen. And instead of maybe this, you know, mad king or claiming to be king bumps into one or two people that denies him, and then there's violence, you know, and let's say that there's a conflict that would be resolved in one place, in one spot right there. But what happens now is that you have millions of people who are supporting them. They're working for these people. There's a whole infrastructure in place. And this is obviously a long kind of complicated process, if you will, of history and, you know, education, you know, schooling and everything else that kind of made this happen, if you will. But one of the problems here as well that you described is that people then associate their own moral framework with these written laws. How do you think that this association began? How can it be broken, if you will?
Well, sometimes it's hard to tell how much of it is sort of hardwired. Like maybe Homo sapiens is kind of a naturally hierarchical species, but I think a lot more of it is programmed in than most people imagine. The thing of, well, we need a leader, and so we're going to follow him and let him rule us and control us, and then yeah, people start to confuse obedience with morality as if they're the same thing, and people openly talk that way. You know, I'm a law-abiding citizen. That right. doesn't mean you do the right thing. It means you do what a politician tells you to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when people say that, they mean I'm a good person. Well, sorry, but the good people in Nazi Germany were the lawbreakers and the tax cheats. And the good people in the Soviet Union were the lawbreakers and tax cheats. In Red China, it was the lawbreakers and tax cheats. The ones who refused to fund the monster and refused to obey it.
Yeah.
They were the good people. But people are trained to have these concepts muddled together in their heads and trained to imagine that obedience is a virtue. And really, obedience is the biggest betrayal to humanity that there could possibly be, to set aside your own judgment and your own conscience in favor of stupidly following orders. And literally, all of tyranny that's ever happened was the result of that. People saying, well, who am I to judge? It's the law, and here I am enforcing the law. If people just wouldn't do that, there wouldn't be world wars and holocausts and huge oppressions. If people would just say, I'm only going to do what I think I have the right to do on my own. You know, there can be little criminals, but you don't get giant wars and huge violent empires by individuals saying, well, I'm responsible for whatever I do. I can't blame anybody else, and I'm not going to listen to anybody else above my own judgment.
Yeah, it's so easy. It should be so easy, but it isn't at this stage for a lot of people because, you know, they have this issue there that people need to overcome, and you know, we'll continue to kind of detail this and try to get closer to it. I did want to go back to violence again, though, because it's an interesting variable, I guess we could call it, in this problem that we're talking about. And I wanted to try to get closer to the question if violence is part of mankind. If we think about it, then, I mean, many people, they hold or try to adjust, I guess, to kind of a politically correct belief, an ideal, if you will, of how we should act and behave as good human beings. But then at the same time, then people still, you know, love blood, violence, and gore. You know, specifically, we can see there's some people who are watching TV and go to the movies. Not everyone is like that, of course, but generally, you know, they like murder mysteries, thrillers to, you know, titillate them and secretly, you know, perhaps they want,
right.
They like when people take, you know, so-called, you know, justice into their own hands, you know, Dirty Harry or, you know, like the movie Payback, mm-hmm. whatever. So how do you think, you know, this crux, how do you think about this? Are we as human beings violent by default, if you will, and this is just something we have to live with? And if so, is it something that we could, that actually is good then, if you will, that we could use to our advantage in what we're talking about here?
Well, I think, you know, I think just as a species, human beings are a very weird creature because we seem to be almost the only ones who have figured out that our natural impulse to hit anybody who annoys us or go forcibly take whatever we want if we're capable, you know, if somebody smaller than us has something we want, go forcibly take it, you know, sort of the way the rest of the animal kingdom works, where human beings have sort of finally started to figure out maybe we shouldn't be that way. Maybe we should interact, you know, voluntarily and cooperatively instead of violently. And I think that's a really bizarre development to have a species yeah. figuring that out. I do think there's still, you know, people, you know, if people go to a movie and they want to see the good guy, you know, they like seeing the bad guy being bad just long enough for the good guy to beat the tar out of him. Like, so the, for most people, justice is a major part of it. They don't want to see the bad guy just slaughter everybody and it says the end.
Yeah.
Like most people would be annoyed. But to me, that's just sort of entertaining their animal instincts, because I think the people who watch murder mysteries aren't likely to go out and murder somebody because, hey, this murder stuff is interesting.
Right.
I'm going to go murder some people.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of, you know, action adventures and violence and sex and this and that and the other thing. People wanting to watch that sort of thing doesn't necessarily mean they think it's a good idea and they're gonna run off and do it.
Sure.
I think we are an animal species, but with this really weird thing on top of it that's pulling us in a different direction and a better direction, whatever that means, of being, you know, cooperative and nonviolent and figuring out that works better than everybody forcibly competing with each other for food and housing and everything else. But on top of that, so that's sort of the description of how I see the species. But then you get authoritarian indoctrination, which completely turns any perception of violence inside out and upside down and backwards and just mangled beyond all recognition. Because there are lots of people who say, well, I believe in democracy and I'm against violence. And they're already wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Because government is always violence. And the an example I use in one video I made, which is called Gun Control is Gun Violence, I point out what the literal reality that if you ask people, you know, nobody would deny this. If you say, okay, so you want gun control, that means this kind of gun will be illegal. But it won't be illegal for everybody. The people who work for government, they'll still have them. Yeah. And if somebody else possesses one after it's quote unquote illegal, what happens? Do they get sent a nasty gram? Do somebody say tisk tisk and shake their finger at them? Or do men with guns go to their house to take them hostage? And then people start to get uncomfortable with the conversation when they start to realize that the people who are pretending they're against guns and against violence, who advocate gun confiscation, gun control, they are directly and personally advocating gun violence against people who haven't hurt anybody. But because people are taught that government is some weird, mystical, magical, superhuman thing that isn't bound by the basic laws of morality, they feel no problem asking it to go do violence. In fact, they're so comfortable with it that they literally don't recognize it as violence. And if you ask somebody, like, well, if you vote for a local school board to tax, you know, to do a property tax that's going to pay for the public school that your kids go to, you know what that means to your neighbor who has no kids. It means he's either going to hand over money that's paying for your kids' education, or they're going to take his house away by force.
Yeah, and that's
eventually
fair, right?
The sheriff will show up with guns and say, get out of this house, we're taking it.
Yep.
Because you didn't hand over money to pay for your neighbor's kids to go to school. And it's this weird contradiction, because if you walk people through the questioning, everybody knows that's the case. Nobody says, gosh, I didn't know they enforce taxes. But they sort of – they have this active, willful ignorance that their brains try not to admit to them, that whenever they advocate government or taxation or regulation, they are advocating violence. So you have all these people who imagine themselves to be nonviolent, who literally advocate violence against everybody they know and everybody they don't know by way of taxation, as all statists do. You know, they bicker over how to spend the stolen loot.
Yep.
But every Democrat and every Republican and everybody who votes wants some form of mass extortion. They don't want it called that. They want it called taxation, because then it sounds nice and they can feel good about what they're doing. But literally, they advocate mass robbery and they don't even notice, just because it's called something else and it's covered over with these pseudo-religious political rituals. And so they imagine themselves to be nonviolent. There is no such thing as a nonviolent statist. You know, most anarchists I know believe in using force in self-defense. if you are a pacifist, you're an anarchist. You cannot be a statist and be a pacifist. You can think you are, but you're not. Because if you advocate the state, you are advocating violence against your fellow man. But people are so disconnected that especially people on the left will say, I'm completely against violence and I'm all for tolerance and I'm against guns and I want a welfare state. Well, yeah. How do you think that's going to be enforced by men with guns threatening violence that's against right. people who don't pay? But yeah. people just don't make the connection. They can't figure out that one and one is two. Even if you walk them through it and they get uncomfortable and start to make excuses. But there, if you believe in government, you are not a nonviolent person. Sorry.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. And well, I want to ask you a little bit more actually about, you know, guns overall, laws and rights and everything. But I wanted to just bring this up first because, well, Robin Hood, right? It's a popular children's story character. It's a hero. The perception is that it's for the good of the whole. I think this idea that it's evil, you know, not to be part of this, if you will, then is because then you're against, you know, taking from the evil rich people, giving it to the poor people. And that's the virtue in it, right? That's the perception people has to have. Otherwise, if they don't, then I don't know what is going on in there, if anything. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's, well, first I'll do a slight defending of the actual story, because mostly Robin Hood took from the government and gave it back to the people who were taxed.
Right.
Even though the saying that everybody knows king. Is yeah. steal from the rich and give to the poor.
Yeah.
Mostly he was robbing the sheriff and the king, which is fine with me because it was all stolen to begin with. He was just getting it back.
Right.
But that doesn't change the mentality people have of
the association of the character.
From the evil rich. The thing is, they, you know, invariably, if I ask people, well, would you do it? If I loaned you a gun, would you go find somebody rich on your neighborhood and hold him up at gunpoint and steal his money and give to the poor? No, I would never do that. That would be against the law and that would be horrible. They, to feel good about envy and hostility and aggression, they have to do it inside the game called politics, because then they believe it's legitimate and it's
right.
moral and it's civilized. And, you know, if you violently rob people this way, you know, by way of men with suits and big, glorious looking buildings, then it's great. It's democracy in action. If you just do it with a gun, then that's horrible. And it's actually the other way around. I have more respect for the armed robber who, you know, he's just doing it himself, plainly, than the voter who advocates that but takes none of the risk and none of the responsibility and pretends he's nonviolent. Like, I'd rather have somebody just come point a gun in my face and say, give me your money. At least he's being honest.
Right.
And then when I shoot him, he won't be all that shocked. I'm like, well, darn. Okay, I guess I lost. But the people who advocate mass robbery and feel good about it, and that's, you know, that's the power of the belief in government, that you have millions and millions of otherwise basically good, rational people advocating mass violence, including against me. And it's a cheap shot, but I use the fact that I was put in a cage for a year for not sending pieces of paper to the IRS. And so I can use that personally against people and say, when they say, oh, I'm not for, you know, I believe we need a tax system, the blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, so you personally condone the system that took me away from my family and put me in a cage for a year because I didn't hand over money to fund a government that I think is horribly evil and destructive. You supported that. And they instantly go into, well, I just voted and I just, you know, they try to dodge any responsibility. But when you put the reality in front of them, they suddenly, like, they don't feel as good about it because they see that, because the violence is obvious. It isn't just, I think people should pay their fair share. You hear all these weird euphemisms that, like, pay their fair share for society. It's like,
right.
Hey, what yep. fair share? And it doesn't go to society. You've never written society on a check that went with the tax return. It goes to the ruling class, and you know that. And it isn't, you know, saying I think people should is a little bit different than I want people put in a cage if they don't. Like, I think people should give to charity, but you won't see me going door to door with a shotgun making sure people are doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a big difference. But people use this terminology to muddle it in their own heads so they can feel good about advocating mass violence by way of government.
And they haven't seen it that directly. That's the bottom line as well, that there is a, you know, disconnection in that, and they haven't, I think, gone through the mental process of thinking this through all the way through, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I was a statist for many, many years, and I didn't think it through. And it's, you know, now I look back and I think, why didn't I notice that? I mean, it's not like it takes this huge explanation. It's
no.
It's kind of obvious to anybody who thinks about it for 2 minutes, but it took me 20 some years before I thought about it for 2 minutes. And now most of what I do is try to convince other people to think about it for 2 minutes. And it takes a huge amount of indoctrination to make people not notice something this obvious. I mean, I often say that the vast majority of what I do is explain concepts that are so simple that every five-year-old should instinctively understand them. Trouble is, I'm up against years and years and years of intentional indoctrination designed to make people not understand the most obvious concepts imaginable. And I went through it myself. I believed the statist mythology, and I spouted it myself, and it took me years just to think of the simplest things in the world. Like, hey, if I can't delegate a right I don't have, that kind of means Congress can't have acquired any rights I don't have. And if it's not okay for me to rob my neighbor, it's not okay for me to vote for somebody else to do it. I mean, this isn't rocket science. It's painfully obvious, but it took me years and years and years to even begin to think about that. And because of the massive intentional indoctrination, training people to not recognize the most self-evident concepts and issues.
And also think about it, despite all the stuff that's coming out about, I mean, everyone knows the politicians' lies. I mean, we all laugh at it, right? When it's brought up on The Daily Show or, you know, with Jon Stewart or whatever. But then a lot of people still crawl back to the voting booths, you know? And I don't get it. The people know this instinctively, I think, that subconsciously, at least, they understand how the game is being played, the politicians' lie, and nothing ever gets done. It's wasteful and everything else, and yet most people condone it. It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a perfect illustration of the fact that the problem is not ever the guy on the throne right now. Like, however nasty and vicious he is and whatever he's trying to do, the problem is that people imagine the throne to be legitimate. And that's why you get this ridiculous thing of everybody knows politicians are liars and crooks, but almost nobody can even enter the conversation of, well, how about if we don't have politicians anymore?
Yeah.
No, we just need the right ones. We need the right guy on the throne.
That's right.
And they're stuck inside the statist box where even when they can see just large-scale blatant injustice and oppression, they think, well, we need a different master. You know, it's like a slave thinking, wow, my master beats the tar out of me and whips me and this and that. I really need to get purchased by a nicer master. And if that's the extent of his mentality, he's a slave forever. And the people who have that mentality towards government, well, we need a nicer group that bosses us around and takes our money. Like, you can't get to civilization in that direction, which is why that belief in authority, if that doesn't go, we just do this forever. We build a horrible, vicious monstrosity, and it falls over, whether it's by revolution or economic collapse, and then we build another one over and over and over again forever until people realize there's no such thing as a legitimate ruling class. Let's stop trying to make one. And then we can actually have humanity.
Wouldn't that be nice? I think the question is if we ever have had that state, you know, maybe many, many thousands of years ago. But I think the development, well, potentially the development of the human species were also in a different, you know, I think mindset and a different mind back then for good or for bad. But how do you view, let's say, conflict resolution then and how to resolve violence against other if there is no law, let's say, or structure in place as we have now? What do you think? Is there a good approach to this? Have you thought about this?
There's always two parts that I use to answer this, because what most people want when they ask the question like, well, how will this be dealt with? How will this be resolved? is they want to hear the description of an overarching central plan to fix everything.
Right.
And so my first answer is always the one that makes them uncomfortable, which is, I don't know. Nobody else knows. And I won't claim to be in a position to force my ideas on anybody. So, and that's the sort of paradox there is people so much want a centralized authoritarian plan that tells them here is how everything will be handled, even though historically that always is a complete disaster as compared to no plan at all. And so the second part of the answer is always I turn it on the person and say, well, what would you do about it? You know, if you had a dispute with somebody, would you go for the gun cabinet first thing? Or would you talk to the guy? And would you? The thing is, when people, as long as people imagine that something outside of themselves has to settle things, you know, everybody wants the all-powerful government that will make justice happen. And instead, they always get the all-powerful government that makes injustice happen. And then they say darn a lot and then try to vote for somebody else. But they want this all-powerful, magical good guy to show up and save the day and make justice prevail. Trouble is, they imagine that government can never be that, and it can't ever be that, and it never has been that, and it never will be that. But they're too uncomfortable with the idea of, look, we have a big planet, we have 7 billion or so people on it, and we're all at the top. There is no superhero that will come save us. We're all just people, and we have to figure out how to interact and how to get along and how to settle disputes without having shootouts every other day, or we'll have shootouts every other day. It's just a statement of reality. But people are so scared of the idea that there isn't control of the world. And what they don't want to admit is there's never control of the world. Government doesn't control everything. It pretends it can, and then it robs and attacks a lot of people. But people want some magical, mystical, superhuman thing that will make sure the good guys win. And there has never been such a thing. There will never be such a thing. And all government does is make sure the violent aggressors win, which is not a good outcome. But people are so into hearing that authoritarian promise. Put me in charge. I have a plan to fix poverty and to end crime and to do this and that and the other thing. They are so addicted to that promise that they fail to notice that it never, ever, ever is fulfilled. And instead, it turns around and is the exact opposite. You know, like you ask people, who's taking more of your money, the protector government or private crooks? Well, golly, it's the protector every time.
Yep.
Well, how about if we try not having an all-powerful superhuman thing that always ends up being the enemy of humanity? But the uncertainty, the thing is reality. Anarchy is reality. And that includes uncertainty. I don't have the ability to make 7 billion people be what I want them to be.
Right, yeah.
And I don't want that ability either. But to just admit, we control ourselves and that's it. And if we cooperate and talk and communicate better, we can make things a lot smoother and less violent. And so there are lots of people with lots of good ideas of how to solve this kind of dispute resolution or how to deal with that sort of conflict. And there's lots and lots of good ideas out there. But to me, the one step that matters is having people realize it's up to them and nobody else. There will not be a magical outside authority that will come and save the world and save them from reality. That's what people are scared of, is admitting that this is a world that they cannot control. They only control themselves. And the ultimate irony is when people try to control humanity because they're scared of it, they make everything 1,000 times worse than if they just say, well, I control me and 7 billion other people can each control themselves and hopefully we can get along. And for the most part, we do, until we fall for the lie. The guy who comes along and says, put me into power and I will make everybody behave. And then you get, you know, Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia and giant violent authoritarian empires, which is always the result of a big bad protector who's going to come along and fix the world. And so we're much, much safer not having a protector, as odd as that sounds.
Well, exactly. I mean, in the name of doing good, a lot of harm is done. It's, you know, it's a simple edict, but that's just how it is. I mean, we can always just urge people to kind of consider the state of things right now. I mean, what do we have now? What's going on in the world? It's violence. There is chaos now, and it isn't rule of law right now. I mean, even those who write these laws and those who are there to enforce them, they break them, you know, break it all the time themselves even. I mean, so it's like it's a layer upon layer here, that even the framework that they've set is things that they continue to break, and it just gets progressively worse and worse. And then the more afraid, I guess, people are because of this, they beg for a bigger system that's supposed to protect them. So in that way, you're right. The only way out of that situation is to stop, you know, demanding that external security and protection, and that is going to be very scary at first, and I think that that's why many people shy away from it. But ultimately, I think that's the only way out of that situation. And I think most people, they turn away because they are afraid of that responsibility, Larkin.
Yeah, and they you know, people need to stop hoping for an all-powerful good guy. There never has been such a thing, and never will be such a thing. And every time you try to build one and give some gang a huge amount of power, you'll find that you created an all-powerful bad guy. Whoops. And after making him all-powerful, you realize he doesn't really care about protecting us. He's more into bossing us around, taking our money. But that feeling of uncertainty of this is chaos. The world is chaos. And it doesn't have to be the bad kind of chaos. You know, from, as I often say, attempt to impose external order, you know, some centralized order on society has caused all of the nasty kind of chaos in the world. But just stepping out of the way and letting quote unquote chaos happen, as in a world of equals, leads to amazing order and organization and peace. Just don't try to control your neighbor. You know, figure out how to get along with them on a voluntary basis as if you're equals. Don't try to build some big thing because you're not sure your neighbor will be good. So you built this giant authoritarian violent monster to keep your neighbor in line. And then guess who that giant authoritarian monster is going to come rob and stomp on. But the uncertainty of anarchy scares the heck out of people, even though historically the less centralized control there is, the better everything is. People are more civilized, they're more prosperous, they're better at handling disputes and problems and crisis that arises and everything else. And the more authoritarian centralized control there is, the more vicious and oppressive things get. I mean, over and over and over again, it's been happening for tens of thousands of years.
Yep.
And people still aren't learning the lesson that all-powerful good guy is not the thing to try for. Billions and billions of decent people acting rationally as if they own themselves, that's what to try for. And the reason that scares people is it means all you get to control is you. You don't get to control the other 7 billion. So deal with it. And it works really well if people accept that and deal with it, and works really badly if they remain determined to have some big mechanism that's going to force their values onto the world. Because quickly it forces its own values onto the world, and those values are never pleasant.
Let's take a break right here, Larkin, before we proceed with the second segment. I just want to kind of carry on this discussion. It's very interesting, and there's a lot of good points here still that we want to get to, of course. Many of these ideas are contained within your book, The Most Dangerous Superstition. Excellent book. I've been reading it lately, and it's so much good stuff in there. You also, of course, have a DVD called Theft by Deception. So let's give out your website and YouTube channel and everything else so people know where to go to kind of pick up more on your work, Larkin.
Yeah, all my stuff can be found at larkenrose.com, which is LarkenRose.com. And I have The Most Dangerous Superstition. I also have my novel, The Iron Web, for sale there. They're also both for sale on Amazon. And my YouTube channel is just youtube.com/LarkenRose. And there are lots and lots of short videos there that have gone, I guess, semi-viral, if there is such a thing, that have, you know, thousands and thousands of views, just by sort of tweaking people's brains, taking one little thing about their comfortable paradigm and messing it up. Like, I don't even bother trying to explain the whole world in a 10-minute YouTube video. I just go in and mess up people's comfortable but incorrect assumptions, and then let them argue about it and wriggle around. But that's what I focus on a lot these days, because it seems to get the most mileage for the least amount of effort, is just some little video pointing out the inherent insanity in statism. And it's working, of making a lot of people back up and think, yeah, why, how does that work? It doesn't seem to make sense. And that, because once people take that first step where they start to question the paradigm, they usually end up where we are.
Well, that's right. You have some great videos on there too, by the way. The main website then, LarkinRolls.com, and you guys have the link to Larkin's YouTube channel right there on the right-hand side. So do check it out. Bookmark the website, whatever you need to do, and keep up with some of his videos and work here, because it's great stuff. And then, of course, you have the books as well, The Most Dangerous Superstition. I really recommend that one. All right, well, stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back with more. Second segment with Larkin Rose, we will begin on justice and equality. Misdirected good intentions and a morally convinced population is one of the most powerful weapons that governments have. Larkin explains how belief in government equals religious programming. It's a mythology, a deification of a system that really doesn't exist anywhere except in the minds of people. We are the ones making it real and giving this invisible entity its power. We'll also discuss how Larkin could be deemed a terrorist at any time now, considering how the term has morphed and progressed into incorporating new groups and ideologies. Rose also speaks about the increase in people that are interested and starting to understand the pro-voluntary and anarchist perspectives, and how the spark inherent in these people who question are actually spreading right now. We'll continue at redicemembers.com, our members' website. Go there to sign up if you haven't already, and continue to listen to this program. We have much more for you there as well, and you don't need to be a member to browse our archives, by the way, so head on over there and take a look. Next on Red Ice Radio, we have Jeffrey James on the Enochian evocation of John Dee, the sorcerer. But more with Larkin Rose is coming up right now.